Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kalb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Vishnu Swami, who is the author of Eternal Dharma, How to Find Spiritual Evolution Through Surrender and Embrace Your Life's True Purpose. Vishnu Swami has a long history of spiritual practice and worldwide, really, teachings. He is a student of the Vedas and will help us understand some of the ancient traditions and how important they are in terms of finding your dharma or your life's purpose. Thank you, Vishnu, for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm excited. This is going to be fun.
It is. Well, you were the youngest Swami in India. Is that correct?
The youngest Swami in the Gaudiya tradition, so I guess you can say that, yes.
So tell us a little bit about your background. I understand you became a monk at age 11, is that right?
Yeah, I'm Western, but I went visiting on a spiritual pilgrimage to India with my parents because they liked spiritual stuff. And there is this beautiful monastery in West Bengal next to the River Ganges, just a few hours away from the most likely place in the world to be eaten by a tiger in India. But no, I didn't see any tigers, very disappointed. But and then I fell in love with this place. I felt this deep affinity for it. So I stayed there for a few days while my parents were there, and then a week, and then a month, then 3 months, then 5 years, and then the rest is history. Then I traveled with my guru around the world, and he made me a Swami, and this is what I teach and what I do.
Well, when did you get the idea to write the book?
I was actually teaching in a yoga studio somewhere in the Midwest, and they had this thing advertised, the power of mantra. And I was going to go and give a class about mantras, which I did around the world. And then I realized that not everybody grew up in a monastery in India.
Right?
Not everyone grew up with mantras being an integral part of their life, where you experience, where you taste, where you can work with these things just as a natural, as just a natural part of life. So I was thinking, how do I explain how this sound vibration or this meditation, something you can't see, something you can't touch, how can I explain it to be real, practical, and tangible? And in that, a system opened up in my mind based on the 5,000 years wisdom of India, which basically goes into depth about the relationship between things that you can see and things that you can't see. The things that are physical, touchable, tangible matter, and things that are etheric, things that are subtle, like emotions, like intelligence, like information, like ideas, like sound vibrations. And I was fascinated. So for 8 years later, I studied how does reality work? How do we live in life? What's everything made up? What is purpose? And how do we have that in an effective system that we can use in a business, use in relationships, and use for practical, tangible, effective things in life? So that's how it started.
So one of the teachings, I believe, is that God kind of brought the known universe or universes into existence through sound, and that is like the, I guess, the basis of how the mantras work. Is that correct?
You can say that. Like in Christianity, they say God said, "Let there be light," and then there was light. So it was through sound vibration, through mantras, through the thousands of years old wisdom of India, which I teach from. It also says that reality was created through sound vibration, through mantra. That's why if you clap your hand, there's sound. If you click, which I'm trying to do by my mic, I don't know if it's coming through,
right?
There's sound there. If you tap the wall, sound exists inside of everything. So that's there. But the process of how anything comes into existence, it's the same, whether it's God doing it, whether you're doing it, whether anything. Things start from the subtle, and they progress down to the physical. I remember I was reading this in an Ayurvedic book about how diseases come inside the body or how the baby is formed inside of the womb. But also, if you want to create a business, also if you want to create a relationship, basically what I teach in the middle section of my book, Eternal Dharma, it's on maverickmonk.com for those who are interested, but is that everything in reality is made of eight things only. And everything in reality, there's earth, water, fire, air, ether, which is sound vibration, which is space. Ether, mind, which is emotions, feelings, intelligence, which is intellect, ideas, information, data. Intelligence and ego, which is identity, paradigms, beliefs, self-concepts. And then there's the soul, the spirit, which is us, which is made of desire and independence. So when anything comes into reality, it starts with desire. I want this desire to happen. From that, then it goes into identity. From that, then ideas start coming. Then it gets communicated in ether. Then energy starts moving in space. And then things come into physical, tangible results. It's a bit of a longer detailed process, which we get into the book. But when you know it, then if something's not happening, you know, you can find where the blockage is and just tweak it and make things happen.
The one thing I was taught, just as a simple example, but I think a powerful one, is that the idea of a table had to exist before a table ever existed.
Exactly.
You know, so that you can't really have anything in the physical plane without the higher levels. But because the higher levels are not, I guess, as tangible, we don't, you know, it takes more contemplation or meditation to understand that these are realms that we actually do work with.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people find the subtle realms to be spiritual, even though they're not. They're physical. And like if you think of air is a physical thing, right? You can blow,
right.
You feel it, but you don't see it. It's just much more subtle
right.
than fire. But fire is much more subtle than water, and water is much more subtle than earth. So in what I call the elemental spectrum, which is what I teach a lot in the book, is earth is the most physical, then water's more subtle, fire's more subtle, air, ether, space, sound, that's even more subtle than air.
Mm-hmm.
And then more subtle than that is emotions. But anyone who's felt them, which should be anyone, right, knows that they're very powerful and very real, even though you can't really stick them in a bottle. You can't really, you know, hold them physically. They're not tangible. And then information, ideas, data. So yes, there's much detail on the physical plane and the subtle plane and the interaction with them. And actually, the subtle plane is the one that's more powerful and what creates the physical plane. It's plane, not pain, but creates pain too. But
I wanted you to give the. I'll start it and then you can finish it. You can live 3 weeks without food, 3 days without water, 3 minutes. Without
air,
and then what's the last one? Because that's amazing.
Not even 3 seconds without prana or chi or energy.
Right.
Which
that's
is
so amazing. But that's
force,
so true. When we die, the life force energy is no longer coming into us.
Exactly.
Right.
And
so
now for some people that seems like, well, that could just be a belief system or that's woo-woo. But then you look at people who do like Qigong, for example, and they're breaking bricks on their head by using that energy.
Right.
Like, well, that's pretty real. That's pretty tangible.
Or curing
you know?
Cancer. I mean, curing cancer. Qigong is very, very, there's all sorts of examples of cancer being cured with Qigong. So that's bringing in that subtle energy in order to drive out, a force that is causing cancer within an organ of low energy.
Yeah.
So
people can I'd say test this stuff. In my book, there's it's actually kind of common. The unbendable arm technique. It's basically just a simple meditation you do, and you on your first time you can make your arm unbendable, just by moving the chi. And I've done it with many people around the world, many weak, small, skinny ladies, or you know, and it's you can just do that by moving the chi with your mind. So I guess the first stage is understanding that the subtle is more powerful than the physical, and the subtle creates the physical. Then the question is, well, how do we work with the subtle domain and the physical domain to create the results that we want? And then how do we do all of that in a way that can help us grow spiritually and practically?
Well, I would assume that bending spoons also shows the subtle over the physical. Is that right? The practice
I've never
of bending
seen
spoons.
That happen except for in The Matrix, but... But
well,
I believe.
I saw it happen at a dinner party. An astronaut invited us all to dinner. He wanted to show us what the real first, you know, when they landed on the moon, the real transcript was. Of course, when they landed, there was all sorts of roads and stuff there and everything. So he showed us the real transcript, And he told us, I'm sure you've heard of Sai Baba. He was a Sai Baba devotee. And he told us all of the miracles that happened when he visited Sai Baba. And then he shared with us how to bend spoons. We just sat around the table and bent spoons. So
oh,
it really
wow.
isn't that hard.
So, oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. I've got to go to dinner with you someday.
It's using subtle energy to change the physical. That's all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So tell us a little bit more about how, give us some examples. I guess Earth is the first one in the most dense of the elements, and how, what the qualities are, and what some of the, like if you have too much Earth energy in your relationships or your business, how you can shift that.
Okay. So I'll take a step back. My book is called okay. Eternal Dharma, and the core fundamental principle is dharma, which means everything has an inherent constitutional purpose. Everything has qualities and a reason for existing in and of itself. So the living entity, the soul, us, we have a purpose. We have a reason why we're alive. We have a dharma. We have a reason why we exist, and we have a higher purpose to execute. And by acting according to our nature or our dharma, then that gives us certain power. It's kind of like your finger. If you bend it the right way, that's the dharma. That's the way it's supposed mm-hmm. to go. It's the way it's meant to be. You bend it the other way, it doesn't work very well. So living entities, God, the universe, everything has its dharma. Everything has its function. And when you act according to, when you have things in their function, in their proper proportions, in the way that they're meant to be, then it's like flowing down the stream. Everything happens naturally. Everything mm-hmm. happens easily, and it just comes in. It's natural. But then when you go against it, that's when there's the problem. So in the right. the whole first section of the book, I explain deeply about dharma, especially about your own dharma, finding who you are, and the concept is a very, very beautiful essence of thousands and thousands of years of wisdom. Then in the second part of the book is what you're alluding to, is where we're talking about the elements, mm-hmm. and we're going into the dharma of each one of the elements. And then we go into looking how, in any situation, do these elements play out, and what to do if there's a deficiency or if there's an excess of each of the elements, or things that are in balance. I remember one of the first times when I saw this was actually when I was studying acupuncture with my mm-hmm. teacher. I was in India. I'd studied shiatsu before, and he took me. He's like, this person has a fever. And he said, this person has a fever, which means there's too much fire in their body, too much fire elements.
Right.
And you could touch their body, and it was hot, and it was fire. So he says, how do you put out a fire? And I was like, what do you mean? He's sick. Why are you asking about how to put out a fire?
Water.
And he's like, yeah, but water or earth? And I was
right.
like, okay, that makes sense, but I don't know how he's got a fever. Anyway, so he put, there's different acupuncture points, and he put acupuncture points for earth and mm-hmm. for water, but specifically mm-hmm. for earth, he chose that, which is stomach and good details. But mm-hmm. then he said, okay, and he turned his clock on and said, in 18 minutes, this is going to go down, the fever. And I was like, really? Mm-hmm. By sticking those needles? And it did, and it happened.
Yeah.
So the foundation of systems like Ayurveda, like acupuncture, a lot of it is just that we have these elements inside the body, all the earth, water, fire, air, ether, right, the five physical elements, and then not all of them take into account the three subtle elements, which is mind, intelligence, and false ego. And when one of them is out of whack, and one of them's excess, and one of them's deficient, then, mm-hmm. then how do you say, then there's fever, then there's disease, then there's trouble, then things don't work out properly. So I'm giving a bit of a background to your question. Mm-hmm. I know you probably already understand that. That's why you asked the question. So the same need for proportion and balance of the elements in the body doesn't only exist in our physical body. It also exists in our relationships. It also exists mm-hmm. when fighting, in battles, in war. It also mm-hmm. exists in many different spaces. So in the book I say, okay, well, what are the qualities? What's the dharma of each one of these elements? And then how do we have them in proportion in different situations? So you asked, which was a very smart question. I've done a lot of these radio shows. No one's asked one so specific like yours, right?
Well, you know, a lot of spiritually based people are, like, probably too much focused in the upper subtle areas, and they're not grounded. So therefore, they have trouble relating to, you know, day-to-day things, maybe holding jobs, maybe you know, they can't really manifest money and a life, you know, life even sometimes material things. So that would mean that they're deficient in the earth element, the grounding element.
You can say it's deficient in the earth element, but actually everything, the earth in a sense, is a natural effect of the subtle elements. So I would say that there's even, how do you say, a disease, even though I'm not, I don't mean that in a bad way, disease, but I would say there's a misalignment in some of the subtle elements, which would be in the identity, which would be in intelligence, which would be in emotions, which would be in that concept. I think there's a core disbelief that the spiritual and the material are separate. So if you're going to be spiritual, you have to be really far away from the material. And if you're rooted to material, then you can't be spiritual.
I agree with you 100% on that. I think that, you know, that it is a misalignment rather than something that has to be. It probably came from the history of all the monasteries and the, you know, the Catholic Church and all of the religious traditions sequestering people so that they could do their spiritual journey, and then thinking that you had to do that in order to do a spiritual journey.
Yeah, there, a lot of people think you've got to disappear into some caves in the Himalayas and meditate, and they say that money is bad, world is bad, sex is bad, stay away from the world.
Right.
But I say, no, it's not about dropping off of the face of the earth, it's about dropping back to earth. How do we integrate our practical and spiritual lives? Because they are naturally integrated, so that when you're successful practically, it helps you advance spiritually. And when you're doing spiritual things, that helps you manifest tangible results, helps you in the here, in the now, in the practical, tangible, physical life. And they need to go in together, because they are. Otherwise, it's adharmic. Otherwise, we're going against Dharma. We're going against nature. So you were going to say
something?
So
do you think right now, just looking at the world, how is the world out of balance?
How is the world out of balance? I've never actually thought of that. I think the real essence is people are still, the relationship, there's this myth that I talk about in my book, the myth of this the spiritual and the material divide. Some websites published it and stuff that we were talking about, it that says the practical and the spiritual are separate. So I think in the world in general, it's the common paradigm is that people keep them separately, and it takes them away from a lot of practical effectiveness, and then people are doing a lot of things that are not nourishing the spirit, that are not help leading them to enlightenment, that are not really making them happy, that are not really making them nourish and not really making them balance. And in doing that, it throws people off of balance, off of center, and then people aren't acting in their true power, but then they're also not acting for the greater good. They're not also not acting from a higher state of consciousness, and then that's what causes wars, and that's what causes so much, how do you say, problems. So I guess if there was a bigger, greater understanding in the world of how to be spiritual and practical at the same time, we would live in a different world.
Do you think it's an educational matter? I mean, so much of the world doesn't understand karma. It doesn't understand cause and effect. It doesn't understand that we're essentially spiritual beings having a physical experience, but that, you know, that things do have consequences. I mean, you can't just behave however and expect good dharma, I guess.
Yes, I think it's educational. I mean, I teach. I wrote my book, Eternal Dharma, maverickmonks.com. And I believe education is essential and necessary, but it's really not the most important thing. The most important thing is experienced knowledge. What's described, there's theoretical knowledge data in the brain. How many people do the right thing even though they know it's the right thing? If they don't feel like doing it, they don't want to do it. They haven't experienced it, they don't have faith in it, it doesn't count. Really what it is, people need to have experience. People need to taste. It needs to be real, like realized knowledge existing inside of their being. And that's much more powerful than just data or information. And really that's what I try to train people to do. I try to take people through a journey so they're not just learning concepts of dharma and karma and how to be effective and elements and this. And oh, that was an interesting idea. It's like, no, how do you make that vibrate through your being? And you know, how do you taste it? How do you eat the mango rather than just theoretically study the mango on a chart?
Well, a lot of times it seems that people these days have crisis, you know, be it in financial, health, relationship crisis, or all three at once. And after the crisis, then they reach out for something more.
that's part of the nature of life. I don't think it's just these days. I think everyone in the ancient wisdom of India, which I teach again, Vedanta Sutra, they've condensed all of that knowledge into 515, like one life phrases. And one of them is Atato Brahma Jigyasa, and that's in Sanskrit. And that says, and therefore one inquires about the absolute. And when you look into the commentaries, it says, therefore what? It's after you've been pounded around by life a little bit.
After
you've been like trying to enjoy and you get slapped in the face, you try to be God and you get slapped in the face, you think you're all powerful and all great and then you get slapped in the face and after a while you're like, why am I here, why am I suffering, what is the purpose of this life, why God, why me? And when you do that, then you begin to acquire, and once you inquire, then the knowledge comes.
Yeah, the cosmic 2x4.
The cosmic 2x4. I like that. We've all felt it.
Right.
Sometimes like, that wasn't a 2x4. No, that was just my imagination. Let me try again.
Wow, that was a 2x4. Yeah. That's very true. And, you know, we were talking, I was doing an interview yesterday with Dr. Amit Goswami, and we were talking something similar here, and that your dreams, you can often analyze your dreams to get information about whether or not the path you're on is going, you know, the right way or the wrong way in terms of your dharma. So one thing, you know, if your dreams are not real pleasant, you might want to consider that, you know, your higher self or your higher guidance is trying to get your attention. And studying the dreams might be one way to, you know, to know if you need to make a course adjustment.
Maybe so. The real question is, okay, how do we know? How do we follow our spiritual path? How do we know we're doing the right thing? And it's essential in all the Eastern traditions is to have a guru, is to have a guide, is to have a teacher. And I know that can be controversial sometimes, especially in the West. No one likes to listen to anyone. Everyone likes to, I got it. I'm the guru, right?
Right.
But really what guru is Chaita Guru, is the guru that exists inside of the heart. Is the intuition, is the Paramatman. I speak also about this in the third part of my book, is that the divine exists everywhere, inside of every atom, outside of everything. Everything is a manifestation from the Supreme, a manifestation from the divine. So if you look inside of everything, God is there, right? The Supreme is there, and you can create a relationship through God that exists inside of the table, that's inside of your heart, that's everywhere. And there's the Chaitanya, like, and I'll try to keep the Sanskrit out, but there's the, God has a supreme will, a supreme desire, and it's the desire of the Supreme that's causing the sun to rise, the sun to set, causing all of existence to flow and exist in the way, because it was created by definition by God and exists for the desire, for the pleasure of God. So if we learn how to tune into our intuition or tune into the guru inside of our heart, then yes, through dreams, the guidance can be given, but not only through dreams. It can come through a feeling inside of the heart. It can come when you're awake. It can come when you're just looking at nature or looking at someone else. God, have you ever had it that you felt someone say something and, you know, that wasn't them? That was a message from the divine. That was
something
a little bit more. I don't know why they said that. They're not that smart.
Right.
That came from someone
true.
Else.
Yeah. And sometimes they can even be homeless or someone who's drunk. That's what's interesting, and they have that's information is channeled right through them, and they probably have no even memory of channeling it through.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's very interesting. The eternal dharma. I really believe that what you're teaching in this book is so much more important than the Western idea of. The manifestation and, you know, having an idea and then working to manifest it. I think it's much more important to get in touch with this eternal dharma and then through that figure out the path that you're supposed to go in life, because I don't think we know necessarily what all the possibilities are.
Exactly. And if you know how to manifest and create whatever you want, and then you create a nuclear bomb. That took a lot of intelligence, a lot of power to create that.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Or to create all kinds of horrible things that, you know,
We're not smart enough to use.
You're not smart enough to use. And why create such things? Why put your energy into doing that? So the exactly. real question is Dharma. My book is Eternal Dharma. Is who are you? And when mm-hmm. I say who are you, what is your core nature? What is right. inseparable from you? What is your purpose? What is your duty? What is your reason for existing that is mm-hmm. inseparable from your very existence? It defines your existence. It's inherent in your core, true constitutional nature. And right. when you act according to that, then everything is perfect. Then the action in and of itself is pleasurable, is satisfying, it pleases mm-hmm. you, it makes you happy, and it's the most effective, and it's in alignment with the rest of nature. Because
that's
we're just one part of the whole system.
Yeah, it's really unlimited energy, too. You said in the book that you were getting bogged down writing, and you had to realign things in order to, you know, to have the energy flow through you. And I think that's really true. I think when we get bogged down in the details and we get bored or we get frustrated, we've cut off that source energy. And
yeah.
then reconnecting with meditation or what is, any spiritual practice that reconnects you is how you get around all the negative emotions and the negative things that would make existence boring or, you know, otherwise not as fun as it could be.
Yeah. There's this flow, and there's a lot of study about flow, which I find kind of interesting. But it's when things are naturally flowing. Like I did martial arts and jiu-jitsu, and if I'm mm-hmm. fighting someone, if I'm not relaxed, if I'm not flowing, if I'm not letting a superior energy flow through me, I lose. If I'm mm-hmm. just trying to control and be all tense and muscly, you get those guys mm-hmm. that do that. You just beat them real fast. It's not there's no power in that. But the real power is in a relaxed attunement, in a natural flow to a higher power. So if you're there wrestling, fighting, jiu-jitsu is very, very much, and you can just kind of tune in and feel how the energy is flowing and flow in accordance with that, then you can mm-hmm. beat them very fast, and it takes a lot of less energy. So
right.
the question is, how do we live life like that? And mm-hmm. then also, it's not only how do we live life like that in any situation, but is what is that thing that we're connecting with? What is that higher energy that's leading me to beat the guy in jiu-jitsu, that's leading me to write the book better, that's leading me to be more effective with less energy? It almost sometimes happens through you. It carries you through, and you're like, what's going on here? But you're just letting it happen. And we get into that in Eternal Dharma.
I think the message of the book is very important because we're not here just to, manifest our deepest desires without even knowing what the possibilities are. You see, we don't know. We don't know what's possible. We don't even know what's 20 years from now. There's all sorts of things coming forth now that the future may be very, very different than what we are projecting. You know, it looks like from the news we're projecting World War III, we're projecting all this, you know, radioactive stuff going into our oceans that is damaging, where the chemtrails, the health challenges, all of these things that are affecting everybody, the chemical toxicity. But in actuality, the future before us is probably very, very bright, and with technologies to clean up all that stuff. So we just have to have an open mind and then follow our guidance rather than, just assume everything is hopeless, which a lot of people are doing these days.
Reality is subjective. Right now, as we speak, I'm sitting in Hawaii. I went to the ocean yesterday. I'll probably go again today, and life mm-hmm. is nice. But I've been before sitting doing radio shows in some very not comfortable places,
right.
in places that are difficult. Or I'm here, but I have a carpet here, and what if there's a little bug in the carpet that somehow I put the table on, and they're being crushed by a table for a long time? Now, for them, they have a hellish existence, and I'm sitting right next to them. I'm like, oh, I'm in Hawaii. I'm happy, right? So experience of life is subjective. It's some people can be living in hell, and some people can be living in heaven right next to each other. you've probably experienced that where you're with someone and they're all happy and you're in a bad mood, or the other way around, and they're, everything is terrible, everything's horrible, rah, 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 right? And it's like, no, it's all beautiful. And you guys are sitting in the same place, breathing the same air, eating the same meal, doing the same thing, but for one person it's really bright, and for one person it's miserable and horrible. It's So to try to generalize, okay, the future of Earth is that we're all going to be happy and it's all going to be beautiful, or it's all going to be terrible. I think any time when you're generalizing, it's all going to be, it's negating the fundamental nature of life, or what the way that reality inherently works, is that our experience of reality is subjective. And if you go into essence, the more that we act according to our dharma, we have a great subjective reality, and the more we go against it, we have a terrible subjective reality, and that's just the spectrum.
And in your book, you give a good example of that in the story of the prince and the minister. We can't even always know if something that we judge bad to happen is really bad, or is that it's actually a blessing. So you can't judge things right away. Do you remember that story that about the prince?
Yes, I do. I remember. I actually heard that story when I was like 5 years old, and it stuck with me, and then I wrote it in the book. It was a really good story.
It is.
Right?
It is.
Yeah. So I guess you read the book. Not all radio show hosts do that. Wow. So what did you think of it?
Well, I always read the books. I've been doing Temple of Health radio show for 20 years. I've interviewed all sorts of people. I mean, all sorts of spiritual leaders, even masters, and a lot of the people in spiritual medicine. But yeah, I mean, if you don't read the book, you can't really do the interview correctly.
So which parts struck you the most? Which part did you find the most interesting?
Well, like I said, I think that the idea of the that you have to align with the dharma of the soul in order to be happy and fulfilled, and even know what course you're supposed to do. I think, like the prince was judging too quickly, I think we have to remain open to possibilities that we don't even know about. And the other thing is, we have a huge amount of spiritual help. So we don't even realize how much spiritual help we have. And so we don't ask for help when we really should be asking for help. It's supposed to be a lot easier here than we are sometimes experiencing.
Yeah. There's one of my guru's guru. Before he left the planet, he wrote like several declarations. And one of them is that if someone, it was in Bengali, so I'm paraphrasing the translation, but it's, if someone is sincere on the spiritual path, they'll never perish. If you really want to connect with the divine, if you really want God, if you really want to know the reason why you exist, if you really want to live your truest, highest, deepest purpose, you'll be okay if you're sincere. If you kind of want to do it, but you want to do it so that you can control things, so that you can become God and be selfishly control things, or if you kind of think it's interesting and you just dabble in it, then that will also be good. It will also help, just like when you take medicine, whether you know it or take it for the right reasons or not, it still works. But really, it's when you have that sincere desire and everything's taken care of automatically. It's like flowing down the stream, because that's closer to dharma. I speak a lot about spiritual surrender, you know, surrendering to a higher power, higher purpose. There's a lot of power in that, a lot of beauty, like we spoke with the martial arts, with fighting, you know. If you can surrender when fighting, it's more powerful than not.
And there's lots of stories with different masters that they are given, I guess, the purpose of things, why things happen, and can maneuver around disasters or difficult situations with ease. And it's almost like if you knew the outcome, you would be able to be infinitely patient. That's something that a master once said. If you're given information through this this connection to your soul or to God or whatever higher power, whatever you call it, you basically can just flow through life and not even have the roadblocks stop you.
Yeah. If you look at the world, we have the sun that if we're a few degrees closer to it, would be an ice cube. If we're a few degrees away, we'd be completely singed and burnt and melted. No, it's the other way around. Anyway,
so
we breathe out what the plants breathe in. They breathe in what we breathe out. That the oceans, there's a symbiotic relationship. There's the sharks eat the fish that keep the sea life in balance, that has the plankton that creates the oxygen that keeps us alive. And I met, you know, and there's just this beautiful, delicate ecosystems where everything just exists and happens in perfect harmony and in perfect beauty. It's like it's almost so perfect. We couldn't have created that. I couldn't have invented such a great system. Yeah, that's God's job. Right, that's the job of the divine. So if we see that everything is happening by a higher purpose or a higher, it's like a clockwork, like a piece of machinery that's happening fine-tuned, then we just need to understand, okay, well, where do I fit into this? Then how do I have all of this? How does it work for me? How does it assist me if I find out which cog I am in the machine? And that's our dharma. That's our purpose, that's
right.
Our nature, who I am. And when you're in there, then you're supported by all of the universe, all of the galaxies, all of reality, the divine, all of existence. And then you just, your dharma is something that's who you are, but it's also something of what you do. Then you just do that. And then there's so much support and so much love and nourishment, and everything is just there for you because you're part of the team. It's like playing football or soccer. You play your part, and the rest of the team does its part, and you win. As soon as you start trying to do all of the parts or leave your post and do something else, then you lose the game.
I actually had that realization in college when I was studying organic chemistry and cell biology, that when you see how structure and function work, cellular organisms become multicellular organisms, you can't deny that God exists. You can't, because the whole system is so amazing. And so it's interesting that scientists can become so materialistic and deny that there's a spiritual aspect to life.
Yes. Yes. And I think
even the laws of physics are so incredible. If you were just studying physical chemistry, I don't see how you can escape the fact that creation is really a miracle.
And this comes down to why. What's the core reason behind that? And what I understand, you've read it, but if you go into desire or the nature of the soul of what do we want, basically we have a choice. Do we want to be selfish or selfless?
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to love, or do we want to dominate and control and use everything for our own selfish interests? And we can choose which path. So I talked about the dark path and the light path, or the shining path. Which path do we want to go? And if you're coming from a place of sincerity, a place of I really want to know the truth, I really want to live my truest potential, my truest purpose, my dharma, I really want to be who I am, I really want to connect and love, then everything you see, you'll see it in that context. So you can be studying biology and chemistry, like, wow, God, the divine, whatever you call it, is so amazing that can make everything in such a beautiful structure and harmony. Or you could be walking in nature and be like, wow, look at that snowflake. It's just so beautiful. Why does it need to be beauty? Why is there beauty existing in a snowflake or in a leaf or in something like that?
Right.
God is so beautiful and it exists everywhere. But then if you're coming from the nature of I want to dominate, I want to control, I want to be God, I want to be the creator, the doer, and everything, it's like, how can I manufacture this snowflake so that I can make a better one? You know, or these cells, I'm going to understand these cells so that I can do something else like this, and I'm going to genetically modify the food. You know, I'm going to make it be the way that I think it should be and try to take what I call it God syndrome, try to become the creator, try to become the controller. And we think that that's going to make us happy because we've got an ailment, which is we're going against our dharma, our nature. That's the reason why we have suffering. That's the reason why sometimes we need the cosmic 2x4 to slap us into shape and be like, okay, wait, what's it really all about? So I guess what I'm saying is, in essence, it's you can see the exact same thing, but come to a different conclusion based on your sincerity, based on your desire. So someone can not know anything but sincerely want to love and connect with the divine, and all knowledge and all wisdom and everything they need on their spiritual path will be provided, and they'll be happy.
That's right.
But someone can know everything and totally be derailed.
Well, the powers that are trying to control the world now, control world population, the chemtrails, genetically modified foods, you know, all of these things, controlling government, the pharmaceutical industries, they think they know best. I mean, they really think that they know best, when in actuality, because they're not in any means in connected to the spiritual, what they know is very limited. And that's the interesting thing, that the people who think they know the most actually know the least. And you're right, people who don't have hardly any scientific knowledge, if they connect with the divine, they can bring in all sorts of amazing information and amazing things that, for example, one of the stories I've heard is that people have been spiritually guided when their child got vaccines and got a really high fever and would have gone on to get autism. They were guided to give them large doses of cod liver oil, and then that reversed the process, of course. There's a scientific reason for that, but think about that. They didn't know any of the science. They didn't even know not to give the vaccine. But then when they were in a very dangerous situation with the health of their child, they were guided to give something that would reverse it. So you see how important this guidance is.
Yes. Yes.
It really is.
And that's really life, is how do we tune into right action? How do we tune into to being guided properly? Because then, I mean, we can't know everything. It's impossible. We can't even understand one atom.
No.
You can spend your whole life studying the I don't even know what it's called scientifically, one atom, right? You can
mm-hmm.
study all the details of that and still not fully get it. And
right.
how we're supposed to understand, you know, all the atoms clustered together and the whole table and the whole computer and the
mm-hmm.
whole everything in existence and all the galaxies and all these things which are so even beyond our existence, we can't. But if we connect with Dharma, we connect with the divine inside, then all knowledge automatically manifests in the heart. We know what to do, how to act, how to be, but not in a confined kind of way. A lot of religion is like that. It's like limiting. We're going to confine you. This is what you're supposed to do. And if you do anything else, you're going to hell. You know, not in that way. It's the confines is what creates the fun, is what creates the freedom, like playing a game of soccer. Right.
Mm-hmm.
If you have the rules, that's what makes it beautiful. If you have your function, if you have this is the goalie, this is that, you have the rules that you play. It's not that, oh, that person is confined because he's the goalie or because he's the whatever position they play on the field. It's like, no, that's the Dharma. That's what brings the beauty. That's what makes the game fun. That's what brings connection.
Yeah. Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information again?
Yes, maverickmonk.com. You can get my book, Eternal Dharma. We only scratched the surface here. We want you to be fully empowered. I promise two things to the audiences. One is effective action. How can you do things to have better results with less effort and passionate enlightenment? How do you do those things to lead you to the highest states of passionate enlightenment? It's a completely new system based on thousands of years of wisdom. Maverickmonk.com. Or you can go to any Barnes & Nobles across America or Amazon or anywhere else. But if you go to maverickmonk.com, then you'll get the links there. And you should totally get the book.
Well, do you have some words of wisdom for our listening audience?
There's a lot of words of wisdom, but the one that comes to my mind immediately is what I already said, is that if you are sincere, if you really want, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said, "Dadi buddhi yogam tum," that I'll give you the intelligence by how which you can come to me. So if you're really sincere, you really want to know the truth, you really want, then all knowledge, everything is arranged, everything is available. So just sincerely want, and everything else will come from there. And get eternal Dharma.
That is so true. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a lovely interview.
Thank you. Thank you.
And this is Dr. Susan Kolb. I've been interviewing Vishnu Swami. His book, Eternal Dharma, How to Find Spiritual Evolution Through Surrender and Embrace Your Life's True Purpose, is one of great wisdom and one I would highly recommend. Next week, we will be interviewing Dr. David Lowe on University of Spirituality, and then the week after that, Professor Garth Nicholson on fibromyalgia and other fatiguing illnesses. Thank you very much for joining us with Temple of Health Radio Show.